Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Journalists at two dozen newspapers walk out the issue, staff cuts, and low pay. Today on the show, we check in with the Valley Report in Alabama on voting rights under attack, and later, the debate over raising the retirement age. Welcome to the Wednesday, June 7th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Adam Keller will be our first guest on the show today, no stranger to America's workforce. He is co-host of the Valley Labor Report out of Alabama, which has been on the air for about 3 years now. Website is tvlr.fm. He's also a member of the Stagehands Union, IATSE Local 900. One of the things we're going to talk about with him is artificial intelligence and how that may threaten so many jobs in the future, and his union has commissioned a study to look into that. We're also going to touch on the attack on voting rights. Last time we had him on the show, a number of Alabama House reps came together to co-sponsor House Bill 209, which would prohibit any person from distributing, ordering, requesting, collecting, completing, obtaining, or delivering an absentee ballot application to the election board. If it passed, you could be charged with a felony. Well, the good news is, I understand it has not passed. Adam's going to give us some details on that. And also, Amazon, the retail, wholesale, and department store union, announced that Amazon fired one of its organizers in the company's Bessemer, Alabama warehouse. That would be Jennifer Bates. She worked there for 3 years. She was injured on the job. She came back. And they were playing hardball with her. They wanted a new doctor's review on her injury, and then she was terminated. And that vote at Bessemer, which happened a couple of years ago, that's still not solved. There's a lot of uncontested votes right now, and Adams will speak to that as well. Later in the show, we're going to go to the state of Iowa and join Christopher Martin. Christopher is a professor of digital journalism at the University of Northern Iowa. And he posted a blog recently on workingclassstudies.wordpress.com. He's part of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor. And the blog was titled, Working Ourselves to Death, Why Increasing the Retirement Age is a Bad Idea. And he starts this off talking about what happened in France in the past couple of months. And there was a lot of TV coverage on that, where more than a million people filled the streets of various cities protesting the fact that the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, wanted to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. And the polling indicated nearly two-thirds of the French people opposed the change. And they got very, very vocal. Well, Christopher takes a look at American history and the eight-hour workday, and that idea came up back in 1866, but it wasn't until 1940 that an amendment to the Fair Labor Standards Act actually gave us the 40-hour work week. And he points out in his article that working-class people are likelier to live shorter lives. Many have started working full-time earlier than their middle-class counterparts, so they work more years before reaching 67 and receiving full benefits. Worse, they may need to continue working even after that to survive, since Social Security alone is not sufficient. In the meantime, wealthier people may start their work lives later and have more years to draw upon Social Security, because they put more money into it. So right now, the age for Social Security is 67, and some want to raise it to 70. And you're going to see more conversations on that in the not-too-distant future. So Christopher Martin talking about raising the retirement age. Why that's a bad idea is our second guest. And right now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. Hundreds of journalists for Gannett, which is the country's largest newspaper chain, walked off the job on Monday, accusing the company's chief executive of decimating its local newsrooms. The walkout, according to the union, was the biggest labor action in Gannett's century-old history. It included workers from about two dozen newsrooms. That includes the Palm Beach Post, the Arizona Republic, and the Austin American Statesman. The demonstrations were expected to continue today. The collective action was timed to coincide with Gannett's annual shareholder meeting, which was Monday. The News Guild, which represents more than 1,000 journalists from Gannett, sent a letter to the shareholders in May urging a vote of no confidence against Mike Reed, the chief executive and chairman. In the letter, the News Guild criticized the company's merger with Gatehouse Media back in 2019, saying it mortgaged the future of our company by loading it up with debt. The letter also criticized Mr. Reed, who was previously the chief executive of Gatehouse and took over Gannett after the merger. The union said his compensation, $7.7 million in 2021 and $3.4 million last year, was far too high for a company shedding jobs and paying what the letter said were depressed wages to the remaining journalists. By the way, Gannett's share price has fallen about 70% since that merger took place. Gannett has created news deserts everywhere you look, said Peter D. Kramer, one of the reporters for the USA Today Network. That's Mike Reed's Gannett. Kramer, who's based in Westchester County, said some Gannett reporters had to take second jobs to supplement their salaries, or simply they left the profession altogether. Lark Marie Anton, spokesperson for Gannett, said in a statement that while the company disagreed with the recommendation to oust Mr. Reed, Gannett remains committed to our shareholder engagement process and takes all feedback seriously. So that's the situation right now at USA Today newspapers and the News Guild. We will feature them on the show tomorrow. We've had John Schloss, who is a fighter. He's been on a number of times, and he talked extensively about these mergers and how bad they have been for workers over the years. So he'll be our guest on the show tomorrow. Right now, though, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to the state of Alabama, check in with Adam Keller on behalf of the Valley Labor Report.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. Before we get to our first guest, just want to mention the show that we did on Monday on America's Workforce. We had Andrew Spahr on the show, and we've had Andrew on the show a number of times, and I've never heard him so fired up. And primarily it's because of the attacks on unions. You got the Disney situation, the banning of books and all that. But do check it out on awfpodcast.com. And by the way, over the past several weeks, about 250,000 people in Florida lost their health insurance coverage through Medicaid. Here's the deal. When COVID was happening, they expanded Medicaid because it was a health emergency. Well, now that COVID is kind of in the past, all the funding has dried up. And as a result, Florida is one of many states where, you know what, those people that are poor will not get health coverage. It's simple as that. Now, some states have continued the programs, but Florida is not one of them. But do get a chance to check out that show on Monday's edition of America's Workforce. Right now, let's go down to the state of Alabama and join Adam Keller. Adam does a great job. He's co-host with Jacob Morrison of the Valley Labor Report. Do check out this website, TVLR-FM, TVLR-FM. It's been going on for about 3 years, and it is the workers' voice in the South. And I'll tell you, we need a workers' voice all around America. And I'm happy to say that America's Workforce is getting a lot of traction, especially in the right-to-work states. Adam Keller, welcome back to the show. And I guess you have some good news to share. The last time that Adam was on, it was at the beginning of May, and there was some draconian legislation, voter suppression legislation, that was on the table. Adam, what's the story, brother? What's happening? Good news, I understand?
Yes, it's so great to actually have a little bit of good news from Alabama today. We had a really terrible voting rights bill, House Bill 209, that would have made it a crime literally to hand someone an absentee ballot application. That's how draconian it was. To give someone a ride to go pick up an application would have been charged with a felony. Thank God it died on the very last day of the legislative session yesterday. So the legislature wrapped up yesterday. We're all breathing a sigh of relief here in Alabama because, there's good, bad, and ugly, more so on the bad and the ugly side when it comes to our legislature. But we did have a little bit of good news. That bill died, and we had a few other pieces of legislation that were actually positive that came through, and thankfully there were a few other bad bills that did die yesterday. So all in all, it could have been much, much worse. And So a lot of us are kind of breathing a sigh of relief today.
Well, Adam, why don't you explain what happened here? Because we need some help in the state of Ohio. We've got some bad legislation that's going to be voted on in August, and we're seeing this pop. When you have a supermajority, especially on the GOP side, they're attacking unions. In that show I mentioned with Andrew Spahr. It's amazing what's going on in Florida. But can you kind of walk me through the process of how the workers in the state of Alabama, and there's a lot of union, there's a lot of organizing going on now, how they were able to topple this? That this had to be a very well-coordinated campaign. Can you speak to that?
Well, sure. There was definitely grassroots opposition to this bill, and some of it, you know, was also the Republicans having to figure out things themselves. There's a lot of new legislators this year, and so they, I think, couldn't quite figure out their priorities. They wanted to attack all of us from every direction, but there's only so many days in a session, right?
Right.
So all their bad ideas that they cooked up over, you know, the past few months, they only had 30 legislative days to accomplish that. And between some filibustering from the minority Democratic caucus and a lot of grassroots opposition to this bill and to a handful of other bills that were defeated, I think it really made a difference. There were committee hearings, public hearings were called. The public hearings were packed with folks. And in fact, this voting rights bill already was amended and kind of weakened before it died. So that there again, it was, you know, kind of in response to public pressure. And it was a broad coalition. You had folks like the League of Women Voters of Alabama, the Alabama Voting Rights Coalition. You had Alabama Rise, various groups, you know, nonpartisan, non-controversial groups that typically, you know, are not, you know, taking a very hard line stand on a lot of different pieces of legislation. But this one was so egregious that it really brought out a lot of folks. And we saw, you know, similar things happen with a school voucher bill that was being pushed through called the Price Act. And it would have been a full scale voucher program. Thankfully, it also died this year. It came pretty close, and some other school choice legislation did make it across the finish line, but the worst of the worst did not. And there again, I think a lot of opposition, and there was even opposition from rural Republicans on that bill who, you know, have seen the writing on the wall that vouchers and privatization really isn't going to be beneficial for their district, however much they may have you know, beef with teachers and public schools, unfortunately, as we are kind of a punching bag and a lot of eyes. But, you know, I think a lot of legislators are starting to do the math and realize that some of these school choice programs are not going to actually benefit the constituents in their district. So between grassroots opposition and, you know, Republicans having to figure out how to govern, which is sometimes a difficult task for them in this state, you know, they just couldn't get it all done. And so we're very, very thankful they couldn't get it all done. And there was some good news actually coming out of the Alabama legislature. We, you know, as you know, with a GOP supermajority, tax cuts are always on the agenda. But time we actually had some tax cuts that were going to help regular working class people. And for the first time in many decades, we actually are going to get some tax relief on our grocery tax, which, you know, we pay the full price of sales taxes on our groceries. We're one of only, I believe, three states that doesn't give a tax break on groceries. So here we are, you know, the small government state, low tax state, but highly regressive tax structure that relies on sales taxes that disproportionately affect working class people. But thanks to the work of coalitions of working people and lots and lots of persistence on these bills, because some of these bills that they got through that were positive have been in the works for decades, the grocery tax being one of those. Progressive folks have worked on grocery tax reform for 20 years, finally got across the finish line this year. And there's going to be a cut on overtime tax pay, which also was supported by both business and labor groups. Now, I'm not – Jacob and I are not quite as sold on that bill, perhaps, as some of the other unions down here. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's tax relief that actually will affect working class people, which is frankly kind of rare because most of the tax cuts are going towards the top. And they got their share of those as well. And, you know, the thing that's going to be interesting to see over the next few years as this plays out, Alabama already has the second lowest taxes in the country in terms of per capita revenue raised. We're the lowest if you factor in lottery revenue, because we're the only one of the only states around that doesn't have a lottery. So when you cut from that position, you know, any tax cuts now seem to promise austerity in the future, right? So we've got a little bit of good news with some tax relief here now in the immediate sense. But down the road, especially if the economy changes, we're going to have a whole new set of fights on our hands to try to have a much more fair and decent tax system that can pay for decent quality of services.
I'm really surprised about the grocery tax. I'll tell you, that's surprising that Alabama still has that intact until now. Let's go back, if you don't mind, to on that voter suppression legislation. What comes to mind, I noted churches are very, very vocal and have been very vocal on social issues. In fact, the AFL-CIO started this campaign, you may recall, Souls to the Polls. Do you remember that?
When they, oh, yeah.
Yeah, they try to get people to, you know, you got to encourage people to vote. I mean, the last time I checked this, this is a free country. We're supposed to encourage people to vote, not suppress the vote. I'm just wondering, were the churches very active in Alabama on this legislation, this draconian legislation that you referenced?
The black churches were, that's for sure. I can't say that all of the church community was, but there was definitely, I actually spoke to folks from Faith in Action Alabama, which is a coalition of primarily African-American churches who were involved in those kind of efforts, voter outreach, get out the vote efforts. And they were very active in this bill and were very explicit in how this would actually criminalize the outreach that they do. And I know that there were pastors, for example, who testified to talk about how this would have put them in jail, right? Just giving a ride to one of their church members to go pick up their absentee ballot application would have resulted in a criminal charge. And that's just so egregious. I credit the faith community for also being involved there. The disability community was very, very vocal as well. And you know, I think that made a difference, right? These legislators had to go out in front of a public hearing of pastors, of blind folks, of other folks from the disability community, and try to look them in the eyes and look them in the face and convince them that this was a bill that was really necessary, right? Even though our former Republican Secretary of State was very clear that our elections have been safe and secure. And as I think I mentioned last time I was on, I mean, let's be honest, the elections aren't very competitive. The Republicans are winning by 25%, right? So, you know, it's not like these are down to the wire, you know, real, real close elections, you know. So it was an imaginary problem all along that was going to have real consequences for real people. And I really credit the folks who stood up for that and fought back. And I think we have to be mindful that it's very likely it will come back next year. That's one thing in the Alabama legislature is persistence, and both sides know how to display that.
Yeah.
Right. And some of these bad bills that died yesterday, they will be coming back. And some of the good bills that didn't quite make it across the finish line, you know, we'll be bringing those back next year as well. So, like I said, the grocery tax cut, that took 20 years to accomplish. Progress is not always fast down here, unfortunately.
No. Not at all.
Given our political makeup. But, you know, what I think can change if more and more working class people get engaged in the political process, we have the potential to do great things.
Adam Keller joining us on our live line right now. He is co-host of the Valley Labor Report, also a member of IATSE 900, Local 900, and a former history teacher, and co-host of the Valley Labor Report, TVLR.FM. is the website. We'll continue the conversation with him later in the show. We're going to go to the state of Iowa and join Christopher Martin, who is a professor of digital journalism at the University of Northern Iowa. We'll talk about raising the retirement age It seems to be a big controversy in France. Not a good idea in the United States of America. We'll talk about that and more back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next portion of the show, sponsored by iMed. Switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. So do this. Go to imed.com, EYEMED.com/union, and you will learn a whole lot more. All right, let's go back to Alabama, rejoin Adam Keller, co-host of the Valley Labor Report. And I want to talk about Amazon. I saw this story from Bessemer, Alabama. Apparently, one of the workers at the warehouse there was fired, claiming she took some sick time. There's a doctor's excuse that didn't show up, according to the company. And then I guess they're still counting the votes from a couple of years ago. This is, I need you to unwind what's going on. Go ahead, Adam.
Sure. So before we got to the situation with Jennifer Bates, we had the NLRB actually issued yet another complaint. And actually, they issued five complaints, and one of those included the Bessemer warehouse, right? And the labor board complaint included all sorts of allegations of union busting, basically, to sum it all up. It was various forms of union busting, captive audience meetings, removal of pro-union materials, surveillance, threats of closure, threats of loss of pay and benefits. All of these were alleged. So this complaint is actually going to lead to an administrative law judge hearing on September 25th. And as you alluded to, the election itself from, 2 years ago, I believe, at this point, is still not actually conclusive. So back in April of 2021 was the original result. And that did not go well for the union, but it was thrown out due to the illegal union busting conduct of Amazon. The workers re-voted in March of 2022. The vote was 993 to 875. So pretty close. And there's about 400 contested ballots that could swing the balance. And so one way or the other, you know, that could shift the results. And unfortunately, here it is, June 2023, and we still don't have those results. And since then, we've had two of the lead organizers for the Amazon campaign in Bessemer have been terminated. The first was Daryl Richardson some months back in January. And now we've heard reports of Jennifer Bates being terminated. And she has been probably the most high-profile union activist in this campaign. And so RWDSU put out a very strong statement about this. They are going to be fighting this termination. They certainly believe it was retaliation for her union organizing. And she said she will not be silenced. And so I think, you know, we'll see how it plays out. Amazon's going to have their, you know, shenanigans that they're up to. But at the end of the day, I was very proud to see the union standing behind her. And I was proud to see her words that she said, "We are a movement. We will not be stopped. And I know my union, recognized or not by you, has my back. We will fight this. I will not be silenced. We will not be stopped." And so I love that from Jennifer Bates. I hate that she's going through this termination. It seems like it is certainly a retaliatory move by Amazon. But, you know, ultimately it's going to be up to the labor board to determine that.
Jennifer, by the way, worked for the company for 3 years, and she took time off because she got injured. And you probably know this. The injuries at Amazon warehouses are more than double normal warehouses in America. They got stats on that, and they're using that as part of their campaign to organize. So she takes some time off, and then I guess Amazon was playing hardball. "Well, where's your doctor's excuse?" And then she gets terminated. So, yeah, this is a case to watch. But Amazon, well, they're pulling out all the stops here. They do right. Not want the union.
Right. And it's sad to see this, you know, because whenever you have someone who's very publicly in favor of the union, someone who's high profile, when the company targets them, of course, it's not just to take out the leader, it's to take out all the followers too, right? It's to put a chilling effect on the entire campaign, and folks get folks scared to think, well, if they'll do this to Jennifer, you know, what will they do to me? Right. And I think that's probably part of Amazon's thinking here, trying to make an example out of her because she has been so high profile. I mean, she's testified before Congress. She's given interviews to the press. She's not hidden her involvement in the campaign whatsoever. And so really egregious from Amazon to go after her, you know, over some minor paperwork allegation. We'll leave it at that. But, you know, very, very disturbing to see from Amazon. I really hope to see the labor board take this seriously and move quickly on this. You know, the labor board under Jennifer Abruzzo has been a breath of fresh air, but, you know, as I mentioned earlier with this election, that doesn't necessarily speed up the timeline.
Right.
The wheels still move pretty slow. So definitely sending my love and solidarity to Jennifer Bates and the entire RWDSU crew who've been fighting so hard for a union there in Bessemer.
And the reason it's slow, they're overworked at the NLRB. As you know, there's a lot of organizing going on right now, and they're not
Absolutely.
Hiring enough people. Yeah, that's the problem.
And now
Adam, last time
debt deal, and even less prospects for fair funding for the NLRB. So it's an underfunded agency doing the best it can, and that's a shame for working people.
Adam, last time that we had you on the show, which was in early May, you and I were talking about this artificial intelligence, and I'll tell you, a lot has happened in the last 3 to 4 weeks. There's been some testimony in Washington, scary testimony as well. And, I mean, this is the technology that can really revolutionize what we're doing right here. I mean, I've seen artificial intelligence actually write newscasts. They might replace TV and radio personalities. It's amazing what's going on. But I understand your union, IATSE, is commissioning a study to look into it. What can you tell us about this, Adam?
Sure. Just a couple weeks ago, IATSE's president, Matthew Loeb, announced the creation of the IATSE Commission on Artificial Intelligence. And so this is a commission to bring together IATSE members and reps at all levels, as well as some external experts to guide the union's approach to the challenges and opportunities that, you know, presented by artificial intelligence in the entertainment industry. And, of course, IATSE representing the stagehands, the wardrobe, the hair and makeup artists, the, you know, more of the physical labor in the entertainment industry. You would think maybe AI doesn't necessarily pose as much of a threat for us in terms of replacing our jobs, you know. But there's good and bad, of course, with any new technology. And I really applaud IATSE. I applaud my union for being forward thinking about this and for actually studying it and trying to piece together how this will impact us and the industries in which we work. And so the commission's going to engage in a comprehensive study of AI technologies with a particular focus on how they're going to reshape the landscape of the entertainment industry jobs, which are under IATSE's jurisdiction. And it's also going to consider how contract provisions, legislation, and training programs can be adapted to ensure the fruits of increased productivity through AI are actually shared equitably among all stakeholders. And that's huge for me. You know, I've always told people I'm not necessarily scared of robots taking our jobs or robots replacing human workers. What I'm scared of is who owns the robots and who profits from the robots. Right. And that's, I think, right, the critical issue for working people is who will benefit and who stands to lose from this. So, you know, technology is exciting. It brings new opportunities. And I think we have to be, you know, open minded to that and forward thinking when it comes to that. But we also have to be mindful of how it can be used to replace humans and how it can be used to replace jobs and how it can really be used to hurt labor. So, yeah, I applaud IATSE for putting a commission together, bringing some experts into the union to talk and really formulate a plan on how is this going to impact our industry and what do we have to be concerned about and maybe what do we have to look forward to?
Sure. Yeah, this is a big issue in the Writers Guild strike. And I had a story yesterday. That strike, by the way, is in week number 6 with the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers. Now, the Directors Guild of America, over the weekend, they settled. They got a tentative agreement. And here's the funny part. The Directors Guild of America reported that the motion picture television producers confirmed that artificial intelligence is not a person and that generating AI cannot replace the duties performed by their members. So, I mean, they went as far as saying, hey, you know what? This technology is not human. So they're making some progress. Hopefully that will spread over to the Writers Guild. But I don't know. We're in that process right now. That, like you said, this is it's changing as we speak. It's scary. It's exciting. Yes, it can be an asset. But when it comes to losing jobs, we don't want to go down that road. And like you, and plus you mentioned the person controlling it. That's the real issue there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's always been the trend when it comes to automation and increased technology. It's, you know, who's in charge, who gets to direct it, who gets to determine the timeline. And our unions need to be at the forefront of those conversations because if we're not, we're going to be left behind and the folks making the decisions are not going to make it in our best interest. That's for sure.
Adam Keller, co-host and co-producer of the Valley Labor Report, former history teacher. And very active in his union. That's IATSE 900, TVLR.FM. Do check out the Valley Report for that and more. You take care, my brother. Tell Jacob I say hello. I'm sure we'll be talking down the road, okay?
All right, sounds great. Thanks so much. Sending my love from Alabama.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about raising the retirement age. Christopher Martin, professor of digital journalism at the University of Northern Iowa, will be joining us. Back in a few minutes right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Iowa right now, specifically the University of Northern Iowa. And joining us on our live line is Professor Christopher Martin. He is a professor of digital journalism and also vice president of United Faculty at the university. And he's here to talk about an article which caught my attention, Working Ourselves to Death, Why Increasing the Retirement Age is Bad. And this is posted on the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor. Great organization. That's out of Georgetown University. We've had Professor Martin on the show in various capacities over the years. This one is interesting because you may recall, those of you listening, the situation in France, which has calmed down a little bit, but nonetheless, they wanted to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. And boy, I tell you, there's a lot of people that said, no, that's not going to happen. Now, if they decided to raise the retirement age, and they're trying to do that with Social Security in the United States, you don't see that kind of thing. Big contrast here, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about here on America's Workforce. Professor, thanks for joining us today. Let me ask you, let's start off with what happened in France. Did that at all surprise you when you saw all those people taking to the streets? What's your take on that?
No, that the French are famous for, getting out in the streets when any little thing kind of steps on their toes. So they, especially the working class, when things are trying to, roll back the social safety net, or in this case, increase the retirement age, people get angry about that. They really work hard to defend, what they think is theirs. So that's, they're probably better than at that than anyone around the world.
Well, let's be honest here. When it comes to unions, they're a whole lot stronger over in Europe than they are in the United States. Is that the big difference there as far as why that is happening there and not here?
That is a big difference, yeah. So the people leading the protest, I mean, it's a group of, group of different unions leading that group. If you see their signs, when they're out in the streets protesting, you'll see the logos for the various unions as well. So, the unions help to organize people and lead them, at the workplace, but, out in the streets as well, especially when the government is trying to take away, something that they feel is theirs.
Well, let's talk in depth here, and I want to go back to what is the year 1866 in the United States. And at that time, we had the National Labor Union. That's what they called it. And they basically called for an 8-hour workday. And it wasn't until 1940 that an amendment to the Fair Labor Standards Act actually gave us the 40-hour work week standard. It's hard to believe it took that long. No surprise, though. I'm sure there was a lot of pushback. But what is it about the United States when it comes to workers? Because it seems like, well, we're working ourselves to death here. And what's going on? What's your take on that? Why is that happening?
Well, we don't have, as you mentioned earlier, the kind of density with labor unions in the United States that happens in other countries. So, people feel like they don't, if they're not organized, that they should, that it's up to the individual and they have to work harder than anyone else. And so, we related to this, people don't take vacations as much as they should be. Mm-hmm. They want to work overtime. They feel like they should, give everything they can to their business. And the downside of that is, and there was a great book that was written in the past couple of years by Sarah Jaffe with the title "Work Won't Love You Back." So that happens. So you give everything you want to your workplace, but a lot of times they won't want, love you back, and they'll, get rid of you at the first sign that they need to do that. So I think that's something that's ingrained in American culture. And we tend to not be as vocal. In fact, historically, we haven't been as vocal when the retirement age got raised.
Yeah, that goes back to the 80s when Reagan was in office, and they did it gradually. Now, if they did it gradually, they only jumped 2 years in France. But if they did it gradually, maybe every 6 months or a year, probably that would have made a difference. But maybe because they did it gradually in the United States, there wasn't an outcry. Is that why?
I think that is. I think it slipped past people. So as in 1983, they phased in this 2-year increase, but they took 22 years to do it. So people in their, and I would probably count myself among these people who are in their 20s and not paying attention in 1983, realize, when they go to retire, around this time, and a lot of those people are now in their 60s or older, they said, wait a minute, I thought the retirement age was 65, and now, at least to get 100% of your Social Security benefits, you have to be at least 67 now. Mm-hmm. So everyone born after 1960, that's the case. So, yeah, I think they slipped it in on the young people, and they, who's thinking about, I'm going to be old and retiring one day when you're in your 20s?
Okay, let's talk about pensions now, and this is so important to point out. In France, in countries that have strong unions, they have good retirement systems. You point out 91% of union workers in France have access to a retirement plan versus 65% of non-union workers. Now, it's important if we have a good plan, and there's a lot of people, I think there's 50% of people in America that have no savings at all when it comes to retirement. They rely solely on Social Security. But because if we had better pensions, we'd probably be more able to retire at a younger age then, right?
Yeah, so that becomes a real problem with, you know, increasing retirement age in America. You know, most people can't afford to retire. I mean, they, you know, if they had pensions earlier and they had Social Security earlier, it would help them. But they have to work all the way to, you know, 67, hoping they could get full Social Security. For working class people, I mean, you know, the statistics tell us that they don't tend not to live as long as people who are, you know, who are higher in the economic profile. If you're a working class person, it's likely that you started working earlier in your life, too. So you may have started working full time when you're 18 or so, whereas, you know, middle class people, especially if you went to college, you might be not starting work until you're in your mid 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So think about, you know, you started when you're 18, you put in, you know, 40 hours or 40 years of labor, you're 58, you're closing in on 65, and then it's 67. So that doesn't really help you very much if you're working class. If you're middle class, and I'm making, you know, kind of a rough distinction here, but if you started work later and you have more money, it's not as much of a problem for you. So I don't think people are thinking about that, especially in government. You know, the different effect on the working class versus other people who might have greater resources.
So, Professor, should people be more vocal? I mean, they're looking at everything right now in Congress. You know this all too well. And they're figuring, well, you know, let's privatize Social Security. That idea has gone down in flames over the years, but that's not going to stop them. Or cutting benefits. And then you got to throw in Medicare in there as well. So there's some scary times that may be ahead of us. So should we be more vocal and say, this is not going to happen in America? We have to, do you think we should kind of take a page out of what's happening in France and other countries on this issue?
Absolutely. When the French were out protesting, a lot of them had signs and they translated into, it's a no. So I think we should do the same thing. In fact, you know, there are some Republicans that have already called for raising Social Security retirement age to 70 for people born in 1978 or after. So if that's you as a listener, if you were born 1978 or after, they're going after you. And pay attention and get ready to protest because it'll be 70. And if that works, they're going to, you know, it's going to keep creeping up. You know, they say that we, you know, live longer now and we're healthier, but you know, it's nice to have some of your, you know, years of retirement not be taken away from you. It's nice to be able to, you know, to not have to go, if you're 70 or over, to have to go to work and you're not healthy. I mean, literally, you're getting worked to death at that point.
Yeah. You know, you bring up a good point. We are living longer, but when it comes to many in the working class, think about the trades. Think about the people that work really, really hard for a living. It takes a toll on your body. And as a result, you're not going to live a long life. I mean, and you throw in health care. Obviously, people that are wealthier are going to get better access to health care. You get all these components. So, you know, with that being the case, then again, you should point out that, hey, you know what? We got to do better with this situation. Do you think anything's going to happen here, though, in your opinion?
Well, I think for, you know, for France, the Macron actually unilaterally put in the higher retirement age from 62 to 64, people are still taking to the streets there. I foresee them trying to raise, I mean, you know, there people have wanted to privatize Social Security, as you mentioned. And so that's been kind of a non-starter, but I think we're going to see more and more people call for increasing the retirement age to 70. You know, and if people get that chance and the government get that chance, I think they will do that. So I think we need to really be on alert for that. And they'll try to sneak it in, but we should pay attention to what's happening there.
Once again, Christopher Martin, professor of digital journalism, vice president of United Faculty at the Department of Communications and Media in the University of Northern Iowa. How's our future journalism students doing there? I have to ask you that before we button it up here.
They're, you know, we're a few weeks from graduation. And I got to say the senior class is looking good. So there's hope.
Okay. You take care and please stay in touch, okay?
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, Flash.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow we'll check in with the News Guild and the United Auto Workers. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.